Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money, episode 987, Minda Hartz, author of The Memo.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
Being on the road and meeting so many women, especially women of color, they've told me that they're just, many of them aren't even asking, right? They're waiting for their boss or their manager to come and like tap them on the shoulder and say, it's your time for a raise. And I realized in my experience, it never happened when I waited, right? It was very rare.
Welcome to So Money, everybody. You know, it's no secret that women make less than men. The gender pay gap is alive and well. Women make 80 cents to every dollar that a man makes for doing equivalent work. But lesser known is that women of color have an even larger pay gap. It's kind of a chasm. Black women earn 61 cents for every dollar earned by their white male coworkers. And my guest today is here to help close that gap and also create more equality at the workplace for women of color. Welcome to So Money, everybody. I'm your host, Farnoosh Torabi. Minda Hartz knows how challenging it is for women of color to advance in the workplace, and she wants to change that through her career development platform, The Memo LLC, and her book, The Memo. She provides a roadmap for women to not only navigate but change the system that they are working within. And she makes it clear that yes, the discrimination you're feeling, those microaggressions, they are real. And we need to acknowledge them so that we can change our reality. Minda and I talk about the impetus for her book, the ugly truths that keep women of color from getting a seat at the table in corporate America, and how everybody can work together, people of color, white people, to create a more inclusive work environment. Here's Minda Hartz. Minda Hartz, welcome to So Money.
So happy to be here. Thank you.
Thank you for writing your book. It's so important that we feel included in the conversation as women when we're talking about work. And while there's so many books out there that are written for women, you really wanted to address women of color because you felt like this wasn't really a conversation that we were having for real, like with real honesty and real strategy. So tell us about what inspired you to write your book. And it's been now about 6 months. So what has been the outcome since you released it?
Yeah, it's really been crazy. I literally just this past weekend came off a 28-city book tour. And
wow.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what the outcome would be. You know, the book came out at the end of August, and it's the first book about women of color and our experiences in the workplace by a major publisher. And so I spent 15 years in corporate America, and I was always one of the only ones, one of the only Black women or women of color. And so, you tend to feel isolated when you're the only one. Yes, as women, we do experience, you know, levels of oppression at times, but it really is different when you're a woman of color. For example, I talk about changing my name just so that I would get the interviews. You know, sometimes other women don't experience that. My hair, you know, I talk to other women who have been told, why don't you wear your pretty hair today? You know, all of those certain microaggressions and biases that we don't address or that hasn't been addressed. And I think in order to create an equitable workplace, we have to talk about the experiences of all women.
Indeed. And, you know, just to go back to Lean In for a second, one of the criticisms I think that was the fallout of the book, although there were many things that I liked about Lean In, one of the sort of annoyances was that here we go again, telling women how they need to behave and act to sort of fit into a model that is otherwise rigid and patriarchal. And so when you were writing the memo, what considerations did you make as far as, you know, there's obviously advice that you can give your readers, but there's also systemic problems that individuals can't really solve for. So how did you reconcile that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, yes, Lean In, it definitely really put some fire under me to tell my career story and those of women of color, because I don't think that the workplace is created equal. And granted, there was some really great advice that Lean In had. I think sometimes it's different when you don't have a certain pedigree, you know, as a woman in the workplace to build your network. And if you're not in the room already, then it's really hard to lean in. And so I think for, at least in my social circles with other women of color, professional women of color that I was with, we talk about Lean In just in many other career books that we just didn't see ourselves in. And so I wanted to write a book in which, you know, Black and brown women, women of color, saw themselves a little differently, and that others who weren't women of color could read about some of the things that we deal with. And so for the first part of the book, I kind of take you on a journey in terms of some of the, I guess, compromises, sacrifices that I made in my career. And what I didn't realize at the time was that I was making these concessions for some people in my environment that wouldn't even learn how to pronounce my full government name, right? And so sometimes when you're making all these concessions, you realize, wow, this is really a detriment to my overall career health. And so I wanted to write a book in which, you know, going into this next decade, that women of color would be able to be a little freer, and hopefully our allies inside the workplace, those managing diverse talent, would understand some of the unique challenges that some of their talent may be facing that they hadn't even considered. And so that's part of why we need to tell various narratives of career stories, because again, you know, all women don't experience the workplace the same.
You know, you've been on this book tour. So when I've been emailing you, I've been getting an auto reply in some cases, and it describes how to get in touch with you if it's urgent. And one of the things is, if you're interested in having me speak or interview me, here's who you can call or connect with. P.S. I have a speaking fee. That is explicitly in the email, which I think is so bold and spot on. But I think some people would be afraid to put that out there because they would be worried that it would immediately exclude them from opportunities. You made a conscious decision to put that in that email. And I wonder, going back through your history of work, what inspired you to do that? And was this something that, has this been successful for you?
You know, I'm glad you brought that up because I always...
Yeah, I noticed that. I was like, good for her.
Well, it's funny because, you know, women will email me and they'll say, the one thing that they comment on is, I can't believe you'd be so bold to put that you have a speaking fee inside your email. And for me, I have to tell you, Farnoosh, that for me, finding my voice inside the workplace was like a metamorphosis, right? If you would have asked the Minda 10 years ago, would she have drafted an auto response in which I was so clear about my expectations in, you know, forming a relationship, I would have said, oh no, right? But what I realized was, if I am not my best advocate, if I don't put some respect on my own check and my own talent, mm-hmm. then I leave it in the hands of someone else. And I think as women, and as a speaker, and you probably know this, there's so many people who reach out and say, can you speak for free? And it's like, well, this is how I make my living. You know, you wouldn't go to, you know, McDonald's and ask them to make you hamburgers for free. And so I figured that one of the things I would do And I just started doing that at the second half of 2019, was be very clear. And so if you want me to come, I want to come too, but let's establish that there is a fee and then we can work from there. And so it's really been great, because people still who really want to talk about this and are serious about equity for all women, they continue to reach out and we talk about and negotiate what that fee is. And then those who don't, obviously they self-select, but I think those are the environments I want to be, and I get to create that environment for myself.
That is so smart. And I love that you've had a positive experience with that, because I think the guess is that, oh, this is going to necessarily diminish my opportunities. And perhaps, yeah, there'll be some people that'll see that and go, well, we don't have a budget, but at least you're right. It kind of takes that elephant out of the room right away, because I think we always dance around the money bit.
Oh, definitely.
For too long.
Definitely. And I'm sure that people are like, who does this woman think she is? Is she like, you know, or something, which is fine. But I realize that we all start somewhere, right? And you want to create relationships with people who respect what you bring to the table. And it's really been helpful, and it's been challenging me. So even in my own, like, I had to lean into my courage and say, okay, if this is what I offer, then, you know, let's have that conversation there. And then again, people will self-select. I can only control the part of the equation that I can, and that is letting people know that I do have that fee.
It's so hard to gain that power, to feel like you're in control though. And one of the themes in your book is about, you know, reclaiming your self-worth, the power and walking away. I was just interviewing celebrity Busy Phillips about how she negotiates for herself in Hollywood. And she prefaced and said, look, I'm going to give you advice, but two things. I have a very specific industry that doesn't necessarily track with others. You know, I don't work in corporate. And two, I'm a privileged white woman. So I just want to say that. And I really appreciated that, because it is important to say these things, right? Because it's not going to necessarily track for all people. Mm-hmm. She said to me, I'm a privileged white woman. And so that's important to keep in mind when I tell you things like, there have been opportunities that I've been presented with that were below my pay rate and I walked away. Would I have been able to walk away if I wasn't as well known, if I was not a privileged white woman? I don't know. And so I want to ask you that question. You know, there is a danger sometimes in walking away, because your ability to ultimately claim power and a fee and seniority in your role and in your work, you have to build that momentum. And maybe you do start at zero, and then you kind of leverage that to ultimately get where you want to go. So how do you know when it's okay to walk away?
Yeah, that I'm glad that you put that into context. And I think it's important to have that discussion. When I started my company, The Memo, in 2015, I was taking speaking gigs for free, right? Because I wanted to hone in on my skills and my delivery and those sorts of things. So it took some time for me to get to that place where I felt comfortable enough to be able to say, you know, this is my fee. And there are still times where I do things because they resonate with my mission, right? And so I work with folks, but it took a couple of years before I was able to say, you know, this is what my fees are. And I think that regardless of what industry you're in, obviously, once you have a certain level of expertise, then you should get paid for your time and your talent. And I think only you can decide what that is. But it took over probably 100 unpaid or very minimally paid speaking engagements. It took, you know, TEDx talks. It took a lot before I was able to say, hey, I'm pretty good at this. And obviously, there's a want for what I have to talk about. And so even in my mind, I still like waver, because I really am an introvert. And so I'm like, oh my God, am I really doing this? But I have to tell you, Farnoosh, one woman said to me, Minda, if you wrote this book and you're, you know, people want you at the moment, you're in demand to talk about The Memo. If you're not expecting a certain fee, what do you think that means for the ones behind you and coming up behind mm-hmm. you? And so when she said that, I realized that I had a responsibility to make sure that I stay here, because I don't want them to take anything less than what they're worth.
Yes. Yes. It's not just about you sometimes.
It's bigger than me.
And it's much bigger than you, which I think is so empowering. It's a reminder of just how powerful you are.
Mm-hmm.
And just to put out there, Black women earn 61 cents for every dollar earned by their white male coworkers. You know, they say it's going to take who knows when for the average woman to reach pay parity. What is the outlook, you think, for women of color?
Yeah, you know, and those stats don't lie. I mean, those are the facts at the moment. And I think for us, and I talk about this, I have a whole chapter in the book about my negotiations and things I've been in. And part of that is really asking, because being on the road and meeting so many women, especially women of color, they've told me that they're just, many of them aren't even asking, right? They're waiting for their boss or their manager to come and like tap them on the shoulder and say, it's your time for a raise. And I realized in my experience, it never happened when I waited, right? It was very rare. And so making sure that I have all of my, you know, statistics, I have my notes, I have my case for support, I really have to put it out there, and we have to be our biggest advocates. And so I did that when I was in a traditional workforce. And now as an entrepreneur, I realize that I have to do that even more because, you know, the paychecks look a little bit different when you're out on your own. So I have to advocate for myself. So we can control the ask, right?
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
You want to know what's worse than shopping for jeans? Shopping for bras. It's never been fun for me until Third Love came into my life. Third Love was launched to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. They make solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen probably since high school and have straps that actually stay put. Third Love's bras are designed at their headquarters in San Francisco, and they're made from premium materials. They put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before they're given the stamp of approval. And whether you're a double A or an H cup, their virtual fitting room can help find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups, so long feeling stuck between two cup sizes that just don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. That's thirdlove.com to get $15 off your order with the code podcast15.
Yes, yes. So much of this is psychological. And I read that you write, I think about this in your book, that there were earlier days when you had to really kind of give yourself a pep talk. Like you had to change the story in your head. And each morning before leaving your car, you'd give yourself a pep talk where you would be able to then go into the workplace and fight against whatever the microaggression of the day was going to be, or even some cases direct racism. What was that pep talk like? How'd it go?
Well, it was mixed with some tears and like some Beyonce lyrics, being honest.
Perfect cocktail. Perfect.
Yeah. But I realized that I still had to remind myself of my worth, even if it was wavering at times in the environment I was working in. But reminding myself that I worked really hard to get here, I belong, you know, in any room that I walk into. Now, it may not be the one that I need to stay in, right? But I had to remind myself that we've worked too hard to lean out now. And I think it's really important to tell ourselves a new story every day, because the, you know, the life we live, the world we live in, it can be sometimes a lot to take in. And sometimes we have to rewrite that new story every morning to remind us about the reasons why we're doing what we're doing.
How do you fight racism at work? Is there a path to success there? Because it seems like, you know, you talk about, what is it? The double bind, mm-hmm. You know, like if you're experiencing gender discrimination at work, that's one challenge. And then you're experiencing perhaps layered onto that, racial discrimination. Do you feel like there's safety in talking about that at work and going to the powers that be and talking about, hey, like, aren't my managers racist? Have you heard of stories about that being successful?
I've probably heard more stories of where it hasn't been successful, right?
Right.
Part of that is when you are one of the only ones and the majority is not experiencing what you are experiencing, then they try to tell you sometimes that what you're experiencing isn't what it is, right? And so it's diminishing how you feel about the situation. And so I think for many of us, we just don't even say anything because we know we're going to met with, well, no, so-and-so didn't mean any harm, when you know that that harm eventually means something to you. And so I think what is going to change the way we dismantle racism in the workplace is when our colleagues, our allies, realize that, oh, I can't just stay silent on this. Maybe I should step in or talk to somebody or acknowledge it, because you can't fight it alone, right? Success is not a solo sport. And so those times when I was in the workplace and something racist was said in the office and I was the only one there, and my colleagues would just kind of look the other way, it's like I was hoping that they would step up for me, but many of them never did, because they didn't want to, you know, get involved. And I think it's going to take all hands on deck, and we can no longer just turn a cheek to racism, unless that's the environment we want to create, right? But if we say we want equity for all, then it's going to take some people leaning into their courage as well.
That's a great transition to my next question, which was that you have in your book advice for white readers who want to create inclusive work environments. So what can we do? What can I do to make sure that there is the change that I want to see in the world happening at work?
Well, I appreciate you just having this conversation on your podcast, because I think sometimes the privilege that many of us have, regardless of, you know, what intersection we sit at, is that sometimes we're not thinking about how others experience things. And so the book, like the memo, if you're not a woman of color, it's important that you read about what it's like, because I'm sure you sit next to one, right? Or you manage a diverse talent. So you'll be a better manager knowing what some of those issues are. But I think the other part is understanding our language. And in that chapter, I really talk about some of the things that historically are said to people of color that I know are well-intentioned, but they make us feel bad, right? So I'm colorblind. Like, I literally was in a Lyft ride for about 40 minutes, and the Lyft driver just kept saying, I'm colorblind. And I'm like, okay, guys. You know what I mean? But I'm like, I want you to see me. And I think that's the issue. We've been so afraid of race, and we don't have to be. That's, you know, I am a Black woman. That is who I am. I want you to see that. And so I would love to redefine allyship into, you know, success partners, where at the end of the day, it's really bridging the empathy gap.
And do we start with our kids at home? Funny, like my son, who is 5.5, he's starting to pick up on people's different skin color and skin tones. We don't go into depth about race yet, because it's like there's a delicate balance, right? Like, how much attention do we give it to a point where he's thinking like, oh, this is a thing, like, you know, and that maybe the differences, he can start to internalize that as like, these differences constitute conversations, which may mean to him, his little brain, that like it's more serious than it should be, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. I know that it can be hard. I think we can all do small steps, right? Small acts of courage, and meaning, like, if you currently don't have anyone not you per se, but if those don't have any people of color or underserved communities in their network, you know, finding ways to expose our children to others, right? And so that it's not like right. this weird thing that you just, you know, see somebody.
It's not a teachable moment, right? Like, you could just see multiculturalism and diversity as he, and that's part of why we live where we do. And I grew up with that. I grew up going to school with a lot of different kids from different races and different religions and different household dynamics, single moms, two dads. And so I think that for me was such a strong foundation because I just kind of accepted at a very early age that the world is vast and that I am just one person on this planet, that the world doesn't revolve around me, that no one is more dominant than the other person. And I think that that's crucial, that yes, conversation is important, but you really start to believe what you believe when you see it.
Exactly. I mean, literally, when I was, I guess you could say in my formative years up until I was about 12 years old, I lived in Southern California and it was a very diverse atmosphere. And I never thought much about, I was never the only one of anything. But then once I was a teenager, my parents moved to a small rural town in Illinois and I was the only one. And it was the first time that I felt out of place, right? It was the first time that some of my, you know, Caucasian friends had seen a Black person. And I felt all of the things that were coming out of them from not being exposed to this. And I think, you know, it does us harm when we don't expose even just each of us, even as adults, if we've been normalized in one situation, that it's really important as we go into the next decade, how are we going to change the way even we show up in the world for others?
Let's shift gears a little bit, Minda, to talking more about money.
Yes, that's important.
I mean, you've already shared a bit about your upbringing. How was money introduced to you as a child in terms of, like, when you think about your childhood and money, what's a story that comes to mind that really captures it?
In my home, I actually have to say, I grew up in a very low income family, so money was very scarce. But one thing that I saw was my grandmother, like she's really, really good about her money. And she would always, you know, tell me, you know, get a savings account, you know, you deposit your money in the bank. And so I really watched my grandmother as I got older and I saw how she was, how she made her money stretch, right? And she lived below her means. And so that was something that's really been etched in my brain as I grew up to, and, you know, entered corporate America to really make my money stretch so that I have a savings account. And so I'm really happy that my grandmother instilled some of those money principles to really respect your money in a way and have a good relationship with it.
And why do you think she was so good with money?
Yeah, my grandmother, she was a single mother of five girls. And so she didn't have a high school diploma. And so she really went out and realized that every dollar counted. And so I'm so happy for her because she was able to buy her first home and help some of her daughters buy their first homes. And this is a woman who probably made an equivalent to maybe $10 an hour. And she was able to make that money stretch. And so seeing her do that, I realized that you don't have to be rich to have a good way of living, right? And so for me, it was just really good to see her as a good money role model.
It's so important. And when you think about the new year, we're at the beginning of a new decade, a new year, 2020, so exciting. What do you hope for your finances this year? Is there a financial goal you have in mind? We asked this question in partnership with our sponsor, Chase. We're really curious to learn about guests' financial resolutions.
Yeah. So continuing to add to my savings account. But the other thing that I hope to do in 2020 is help invest in women-owned businesses, because I think it's really a catalyst for closing the wealth gap. And so I want to be able to do more angel investing. And so I'm making sure that I'm living below my means so I can help others and invest in their business as well.
And book number two, I mean, I got to ask a new author who's done very well with her first. I'm sure there's talk about the next book?
Well, yeah, there is. There is a talk of it. And I will share with you that we're actually talking about a younger version of the memo, because to your point earlier, some of these things that we learn as young adults, right? Young children. And so what would it look like if we had some of these conversations early on? And so we're playing around with that right now.
And so if you had to give advice to a younger Minda or a younger reader of the memo who is looking ahead and optimistic about getting her job and working her way through her career, what is some strategic advice you would give her that would necessarily shield her from any of the still lingering racism or inequalities at the work in the workplace?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I would tell the younger Minda, and I tell any woman really, is make sure that you interview your future employer as well. I think when I entered the workplace and every job I had, I was pretty much just happy to get the role, right? This is great money. It's a title change. And I was just grateful to be at the table and in the room, but I didn't ask always the right questions of them. You know, maybe had I asked certain questions, I would have found out what type of environment I would have been exposed to. So I think remembering to interview your employer too, because it's very, we give the power away sometimes. And I could have asked those questions about culture and environment and predecessors. And I think I would have gotten down to a lot of that. I would have avoided some of those bad environments, those toxic environments. So remember that you have the power as well.
And just to add on to that, maybe not so much for someone who's getting her first job because you don't really have any money yet, but yeah. I think your ability to walk away from a situation that reads bad to you is having money, right? When you feel financially empowered, that's agency to become more choosy, right? Because sometimes we are just happy to be there because it's paying the bills, right? Frankly. I wish for a day where everybody, especially women, have the financial security where they can say no more for whatever reason. It doesn't feel safe. It doesn't align. They want to wait for something better. That is a change that I'd love to see. And it's so great that you're sharing this message with all generations now. It's so important. And I hope 2020 will be a year of progress. I think it will be.
I think so too.
And as long as you're out there, I think we'll be definitely moving the needle. Thank you so much, Minda Hart.
Thank you.
Learn more about Minda at mindaharts.com, also myweeklymemo.com. Her book again is called The Memo. She's on Instagram at mindaharts. All this information is available at somoneypodcast.com, where you can get the audio, download the transcript, and if you have a question for me, click on Ask Farnoosh and type away, or you can leave an audio message there for our Friday episodes of Ask Farnoosh. Happy New Year, everybody, and I hope your day is so money. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.